Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. We always have like the craziest, most fascinating guests on the show. We've never had somebody who was actually pardoned by a president, Dan, I don't think.
Now, right? We've had a bunch of people that probably need a pardon. And I'm probably going to need one at some point as well.
So. Yes. Yeah, we'll There's see. No way this show makes it past the Biden administration.
Yeah, for sure.
One would think. No, but we've got Gary Brugman on the show today. Welcome, my man. You were in the press a lot for this.
I was, yes.
A few years ago. Come in just a tad closer there. There you go.
There we go.
For the ladies. Ladies need to hear that voice, Gary.
Girls.
Yeah, yeah. Man, you were recently pardoned by President Trump. We'll get into why here in a moment. But the fascinating part about your pardon was you were there the day that the Capitol insurrection happened.
I sure was. I wasn't at the Capitol. I was actually in the White House waiting on the president.
So did you actually get to meet the president?
I did not, because of that insurrection that happened, or Capitol breach.
Yeah.
I was in the White House waiting on him. I got invited to the White House, and I was getting a tour, and I was sitting in a cabinet member's office, and then that happened. We heard that there was starting to be a breach. I was in her office, and we walked to the Roosevelt room, and I kind of got sat down there, and he got taken to the situation room.
No shit.
I never got a chance to meet him.
If I was in the White House and stuff went sideways like that and everybody started going away, I'd probably find my way into the Lincoln bedroom to pound off or something, right? Like, you got to do something weird. You got to take advantage of that opportunity, because how often are you going to be unescorted inside the White House?
Not very often. I mean, you were in the Roosevelt room.
I was in the Roosevelt room right next to Teddy Roosevelt's Nobel Peace Prize, which you were just talking about. It was like right in front.
Part of you think of like, all right, everybody's storming the couch. Like, now's the perfect time to steal something like this.
Yeah.
Just
steal the painting, out of there. Take the painting off the wall and shit.
Yeah. No, nobody would notice.
They probably have like a lot of the really nice art galleries, they have these weighted sensors. Like, if the weight distribution changes at all, a fucking alarm goes off. I'm pretty sure the White House has that for the fucking 300-year-old pictures they have inside of there, right?
I don't know.
They'd have to.
Dude, no way. The security in there is amazing because I had to put up my cell phone.
Uh-huh.
And they had the National Defense guy's office, and I walked in there, and they're like, you don't have a cell phone on you because if you walk in here into this room with a cell phone, the sensors will go off.
Yeah. No so, shit.
Yeah, yeah. Everything, the amazing security everywhere.
Wow, that's crazy.
They have cell phone lockers when you walk in.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. So what happens when the sensor goes off?
Secret Service will come have your ass, I would imagine.
Really?
Yeah.
They're just going to come take your phone. I'm sure people make the mistake from time to time, but usually you don't want alarm. It's a silent alarm, too. It's not like the whole White House is blasting. Right.
Well, I didn't know if it was like one of that Marjorie Chicks things, like where it was a Jewish laser that comes down.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of eliminates you and your phone. I'm not sure how that works. Shocking that she was stripped of all her powers.
I should probably move to her district. 75% of people voted for her. That means there's probably some potential future Mrs. Holloway's there, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. A lot. Yeah.
Absolutely.
A lot.
Can't hear you, Bob.
Yeah, after she got stripped.
She got stripped, they interviewed people from her district, and they're like, we love her. We support her fully. That's our girl. Like, we believe what she says.
What district was it?
Yeah. It's like North Georgia. That's all I know.
Like Stone Mountain?
Yeah.
Because Stone Mountain, you know Stone Mountain is like the fucking, the Confederate version of the
Mount Rushmore. Oh, yeah. I grew up
there. It's like, hey, we fucking lost. Let's build a statue, man. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And if you really want to go down the stereotype rabbit hole there, they used to have a laser show on Friday nights against Stone Mountain.
Oh, boy.
To Leonard Skinner. So, I mean, it was everything you could hope for down there.
If you want to go on YouTube and look that up, don't instead look up the Squidbillies portrayal of it.
It's funnier.
Yeah, it is. It's way better.
Yeah, it's way funnier. He's talking about Awesome Bill from Dawsonville, which, of course, is Bill Elliott
Dawsonville,
from
Georgia.
Dawsonville, Georgia.
Yeah. Big fan of Dawsonville and all the fine folks that are living there.
Yeah, big fan of
Squidbillies,
too. Yeah.
A lot of carpet up in Dawsonville. But for you personally, that day, when the president bounces, everything's kind of under lockdown, was there a part of you that was like, ah, shit, man, I'm probably not going to get this pardon now?
No, I had already got the pardon.
Oh, you did?
I had already got the pardon. I got the pardon on the day before Christmas Eve.
No shit. Yes. So the reason I ask, I was always curious how that works. Like, just reading it in the media, you assume, like, you get the pardon and it's right then and there.
It's done.
It's done, yeah. But, when you get it on a Christmas Eve, were you in prison and they just let you out?
Oh, no. I've been out of prison since 2006.
2006? No
yes.
shit.
Yes. But if you happen to be in prison, they wouldn't let you out immediately. It would take at least a week or so for the paper to process.
Right,
yeah. But all your rights would be reinstated as of that day that he signed it.
Which means you can own a gun now.
I can.
Yeah, that's nice. Do you get like a rutus? A rutus is that wooden sword that ex-slaves used to get out of the gladiator pits. Like, if you won your freedom, you get a rutus. You have to carry it around for the rest of your life. Do you have to carry some shit around or what?
No, I actually got a letter from the pardon attorney, which I usually carry a copy of in my truck. Mm-hmm. And I was going to bring it, and I forgot because I didn't come in my truck. But I got a certificate from the pardon attorney because the original one that the president signs, I wanted, but it's part of the presidential archives. They keep that, and it goes to presidential archives. So the pardon attorney actually gives me the certificate reinstating all my firearms disabilities and civil rights. I can vote now. I can run for office. I'm going to run for sheriff. Hopefully one day we'll see.
Really?
I don't know. It's part of my plan. But
yeah, because, I mean, dude, again, I guess this is how naive I am about presidential pardons.
That's one office I would run for, by the sheriff? Way. Sheriff, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't run for any other political office.
Huh. I being naive to the whole pardon situation was why I wanted to have you on. Whenever you hear presidential pardon, and I hate to lump you into this category, but you know, you hear fucking Kodak Black, Lil Wayne, all these guys.
Yeah, where you can't even rap, dude. Get out of here.
Yeah. But I mean, like, Kodak Black was in jail, so I figured, all right, great. You see your name on the list and you're pardoned. One would have thought you were still in prison. What is the significance of having a pardon for something that you've already been out of prison since 2006?
Well, I served 9 years in the Coast Guard,
mm-hmm.
and I was a Border Patrol agent for almost six, including the investigation time and everything. But after that, I really didn't know what to do because I had worked for the government for so long. And I ended up going to prison. When I got out, I didn't know what to do. I eventually ended up in the oil field, and I was I worked for a couple of big companies, Chesapeake Energy and stuff. But I could not get past that truck driver level. I got to like a trainer level. I couldn't get up into the management, and I got 2 degrees. Right. I managed to get my degree since I've been out of the prison. I got 2 degrees, an associate's and a bachelor's. I could not get into management because of the background.
Right.
No shit.
And think about that from a crime bill perspective, right?
Who wrote that?
Joe Biden wrote that. Gotcha, so we talk about the crime bill a lot and the fact that over 3 million black men have been put in prison because of it. Now, how easy do you think it is for a black kid that got a felony for whatever reason at 17 to have a good career after that?
Right.
Probably impossible, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, hearing your story, it clearly is.
I mean, this is a guy that didn't have that same plight, served his country, and it still happened to him. So imagine what it happens to people that are completely disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And we just like, we like to ignore that shit a lot because it's not me. But sometimes it is us. What's that phrase? There but for the grace of God go I, something like that.
Exactly.
Like, this shit can happen to any of us. That's why that statement, like, first they came for the socialists, and I didn't say shit because I wasn't a socialist. It is imperative upon all of us to align ourselves against injustice every single day, regardless of who it's happening to or who the fucking person causing it is. You know what I mean? And this is one of those situations. We'll get into the details of your case, but it's fucking stupid.
And were you lobbying for it? I know, like, Ted Cruz and John Cornyn and those guys were, but how does it start? Like, do you have to hire an attorney and say, all right, man, I want my life back. Here's how I go about this.
Well, I've been at it for a long time because after I got my pardon on the day before Christmas Eve, and then January 14th, barely 3 weeks later, would have been 20 years that this initial incident that I went to prison for happened. So the guy I pushed on the ground happened 20 years ago. So I've been actually trying to get this going for a long time, but I hadn't applied for a pardon because one of the things when you apply for a pardon, you have to show remorse, and I did my job, and I never denied what I did.
I mean, if you've got a detainee and he tries to get up and you're telling him not to, pushing him back down on the ground isn't that's not brutality. That's what you're trained to do, literally.
Exactly.
Like, in from the code, like, the code, people talk a lot of shit about the Coast Guard, but to be honest, the people that do interdiction for Coast Guard, that's a pretty, basically what you're doing is you're a fucking sea cop, motherfucker. I mean, you've been trained to be a police officer for years.
I was doing that back in 92.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the same TTPs in all those scenarios. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense.
And for the audience out there, I guess share your story of what happened, because it started in, like, your border patrol.
Right.
You were going after somebody in a pecan orchard?
In a pecan orchard, yeah. So the story is actually very simple. There's kind of like three parts of the story. But after the fact, like now, 20 years later, I realized so many things that happened that it's unreal that it even happened. And one thing I got to say is, look at what they did to General Flynn. And even what they did to President Trump, Bernard Kerik, what chance did I have against the federal government if they did that to all these high-powered people?
Yeah, right? I didn't stand a chance.
So, and nobody knows what it's like, what it feels like when the power of the federal government comes down on top of you.
Well,
it's,
I mean, Fred Durst might.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously. R.I.P.
Nobody,
is he still alive?
No one knows what it's like. That's not really his song, I guess. Cover. That's a cover joke.
It's more of a cover, but you know, Limp Bizkit still did it. So, I mean, you guys were, it was a routine day for you guys, right? Share your story.
All right. So stop me at any time, but there's parts to it. So January 14th, 2001, I was assigned downtown Eagle Pass, Texas, around 6:30, 7 p.m. The scope truck, which is a infrared scope, it picks up about 20 feet in the air and it spots everything up to 5 miles away, spotted the group coming across. So me and my partner headed that way to go catch a group. It was a group of about 15 illegal aliens. And he started giving chase, and they were running towards us. So I was a passenger, so I got out on foot, started chasing the group for about a mile and a half, the whole time yelling in Spanish, párense, párense, which means stop. Mm-hmm. They were running over barbed wire fences, through concrete laterals, in a pecan orchard. Another agent and his trainee rode up on me, and I was losing the group because I had 38 pounds of gear already, a mile and a half, about a 15-minute foot chase. They're like, which way they go? I was out of breath, so I pointed. They took off in the vehicle. They got to a point where they couldn't drive anymore. Trainee, fresh legs, 4 days out in the field, jumped out, ran, caught the group. He was trying to get them to sit down. Mm-hmm. There were some standing to his left. Some were sitting to his right. He was going like this.
And just to be clear again in policing, whenever you're outnumbered like that, you try to get everybody on the ground, legs crossed so they can't jump up really fast. There's a whole fucking process, and there's a reason for it. Right. It's so you don't get overpowered by a larger force.
Right. Exactly.
It's not intimidation. It's not brutality. It's because I don't want to get into a fist fight with 12 dudes.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Anyways, continue.
There were two behind him that were squatting, and they had their bags, and they were squatting, and they were doing this number. And I was still running up to him, and I can see him. I was kind of flanking him, and I didn't know if they were going to jump the agent or get up and run because they were already apprehended.
Mm. Sure.
So I ran up, and I did as I was trained. I put my hand on my weapon, and I used the bottom of my foot, and I pushed them both on the sides from the squatting to the sitting position. I knocked them on their ass. Never denied that.
Yeah.
Anybody that's been trained in the use of force says knows that you always use the minimum amount of force necessary to compel compliance.
Right. Yep.
But when you apply the force, you always apply 100% because you're not there to do math. You don't know, well, you know, Dan's about 6 feet, 210 pounds. I'm this.
Mass times acceleration is force. So how much do I have to do?
No, you don't have
just
that
kick
time.
The shit out of the guy.
When you apply force, you apply 100% until he complies and you stop.
Yeah.
So I knocked him on their ass. Never denied that. That was it. Transported them to the station.
Now, were they drugs?
Nope. Elite, just
regular, right. Illegal. Okay.
The one particular guy that I got charged with was his fifth time in 5 days trying to get into the country.
Oh,
kept getting sent back to Mexico. Right. So fast forward. That was it. That's all that happened that night.
Even as a private citizen, technically, you would be able to do exactly what you did because they're committing a crime in your presence, the crime of unlawful presence, right?
Exactly.
They're committing that
crime on your property.
Even if it's just a misdemeanor, if you're in pretty much every state in the country, when it comes to citizen's arrest, even if you weren't a federal agent at the time, you can detain that person for doing that. Like literally that is within the purview of any citizen in the country. Like if I saw you assaulting somebody and it was still simple assault or battery, which is a felony, I could interdict and stop that, sometimes even using deadly force, right? This I've read your scenario a bunch of times, and even if the worst thing that's been said is true, if you had to go up somebody's head to get compliance at that point, it still doesn't rise to the level of the shit you had to deal with. Honestly, as somebody who's dealt with quite a few detainees, not here, but in other countries, like, look, man, when you're severely outnumbered in a very dangerous situation like that, you're not having a fucking tea party here.
Right.
Right. If you need to fucking crack somebody and intimidate them enough so they'll fucking, it's you set the tone. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that police should be walking around fucking, you know, talking down to people and slapping people around or something like that. But once you, those people were 100% committing a crime.
And patrolling the border is a completely different form of law enforcement.
It sure is, yeah.
You know, because with all due respect to all my deputies, troopers, and police officers out there, but if they roll up on the scene and there's five dudes there and they got to go in, they're calling for backup.
Yeah, for sure.
We're out there with 20, 30, 40, 50 people and it's just you and your partner.
There's no backup coming.
There isn't, not for an hour.
Yeah. Even when they had, what was it, Operation Jumpstart in 05 to 07 or something like that, they were backfilling Border Patrol with National Guard from Texas, Nevada, and shit like that. Even then, they still didn't have the people. Even today, they don't have the people to patrol that border. I mean, it's ridiculous. Anyways, yeah, so... So you walk up, put your foot, I mean, usually what I have been trained to do is to put my foot somewhere from the rib cage down to the hip, somewhere in that area, and just push them right back down into the ground, right?
That's where I put
That's the least, you can apply a considerable amount of force without actually injuring somebody, right? You can kick the shit out of this area of their body and no physical harm will come to them. Maybe a bruise, but nothing really bad's gonna, it's not like you're hitting them in the head with a fucking ass baton or something.
Exactly. Right. And so when this happens, did this particular fellow, did he say, oh, I was treated unfairly and I want to sue him? Or and again, this is completely a civilian question because I have no fucking idea what happens in this situation. It's shocking to hear that was it. And then who reports that and says, you did this and I want you to fucking go to jail?
Well, when they brought him to the station has a sign that says, if you feel you've been treated unfairly, call this number and you can speak to the Mexican consulate. Normally, there's a procedure where they tell your supervisor, hey, this agent did this to me. The supervisor will call the Mexican consulate. They'll come have a conversation. If they feel something was done wrong, they'll either give you a reprimand or do an internal investigation.
Yeah.
Or if they feel it was criminal, they'll go outside and, you know, continue it from there. Well, this particular alien saw the Mexican consulate on his way out, talked to him. The consulate left and went to the U.S. attorney. U.S. attorney went to the office of the inspector general, and the inspector general came down on my ass. When they took my weapon away and put me on desk duty for 18 months, my bosses were like, we don't know what this is. It's not us. This is outside.
Well, so, I don't know why we would, one, the Mexican government just arrested like 30 of their police officers at the border for doing fucked up shit. Mm-hmm. Like
they always have.
They've just been disappearing people for the last couple of months. They're like, hey, we got to do something. Just arrest those guys over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fuck these people. And I don't know. I've never understood. Like, I worked for USCIS doing intelligence for a while, right? I don't understand why we give civil rights to people that are illegally in our country.
According to the U.S. attorney at my trial, he had some civil rights because he was 400 feet into the United States, so he had 400 feet of civil rights because the Constitution says any person in the United States, not any citizen.
Yeah, well, we should probably look into changing that.
But to a point, I agree, because just because you're an illegal alien doesn't mean you have the right to be, you know, beaten up.
No, for
I didn't
sure.
do any of that. That sure, that's my yeah. point, you know?
No. So. But there's a limit, too. I mean, yeah, you have civil rights, but you don't have the right to commit a crime with impunity.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
And you don't have the right to resist arrest. So what the fuck are we talking about here?
Right. And according to these court records, what they're saying is that you assaulted a man that was seated next to him and asked him whether he liked to run, and then pushing him to the ground with his foot and then striking him with his hands.
So this illegal alien.
Well, there's a part to that.
A guy that 100% does not speak English somehow interpreted this fucking Cajun fucking hillbilly over here. There's no way back then he understood what you were saying, right?
He understood what I was saying perfectly. Yo hablo español perfectamente.
Oh, you were talking shit to him in Spanish?
I talked to him in Spanish.
There you go.
He understood exactly what I was saying. But that comment came out at the trial, Russ. At my trial, the U.S. attorney says...
So wait, you're saying it wasn't in the pre-file court documents?
No, sir. That whole thing that he just said?
Yeah.
So he's introducing new evidence at the trial then?
Well, he's rearranging my words.
Yeah, I see.
Because at the trial, he said, so you ran up and you wound your leg up to Cincinnati and you were yelling, so you like to run, huh? And then proceeded to kick the bejesus out of this illegal alien. Those were his words.
Yeah.
I told him, I don't know what comic book you've been reading. And this is me on the stand. I don't know what comic book you've been reading, sir. I said, but that didn't happen that way. I ran up. I put my hand on my weapon and I pushed him with the bottom of my, I didn't wind my leg up. I pushed him. Big difference.
And then
I asked him, why are you running?
Yeah.
I didn't say, so you like to run, huh? I asked him, why are you running? That changes everything.
By the way, it wouldn't work effectively if you wound up and kicked him like that. Like, do you understand physics and shit?
He would get up and fight me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm reading your statement. It says, I ran up to the aliens, and with the bottom of my foot, I pushed the first alien to the ground, and I told him to sit down, as I said. Siéntense.
Siéntense.
Sit down. I'm close. And then I turned, it says you, and this was in a blog written by you, I then turned to the second alien, pushed him to the ground, too. So you weren't denying any of this whatsoever.
No, sir.
But you certainly just didn't kick the shit out of these guys.
I did not.
Right? In a case like this, when you are on trial and it's your word against theirs, why are they not trusting the officer versus a guy who's illegally tried to get into the country five days in a row?
I don't know. But what I, like I said,
earlier, I mean, a guy that had up until that point, 14 years of service in the federal government, in the military, and then, I mean, like, if you had a history of abuse before, that might become something, but...
Now that you said that, then brings me to the second part.
Okay.
There's a whole second part to this.
Sure.
Speaking of the history, that happened January 14th, 2001. Mm-hmm. On February 22nd, where I showed you that picture...
Yeah, actually, we have this picture. Can you insert it right here onto the screen? Great. Can describe to the audience, by the way, if you're not subscribed, subscribe to Drinking Bros Podcast on YouTube.
Man,
you can
those
see
old
this
uniforms
photo.
Are ugly as shit.
I know, they're crazy. This looks like an old Robert Rodriguez movie.
Yeah.
Show the first picture there. Now, describe what this is. It says February 22nd, 2001.
So that was 6 weeks later after I pushed this first illegal alien on the ground. It was about 4:30 in the morning, and it was a quiet night, and I was working with my partner, and some other agents had some 46 traffic, which is narcotics, coming across the river. We responded for backup because normally when there is 46 traffic, there's guns.
Sure.
So, and it's one of the most dangerous situations an agent can be in. So the group got jumped. There were seven mules. They dropped the dope. We had caught five. We scattered around, they caught five. Two were missing, and they couldn't find them. And a guy at the station, the infrared camera operator, had spotted them with the camera sitting in some high grass a couple of fields away. So they kind of guided me in, and I hopped the fence, and I was walking towards them. I could hear on my earpiece saying, all right, to your 10 o'clock. And then I saw their silhouettes, and I started walking towards them. And once they saw me, they got up, started running. So I started chasing them. They got to a... they got to a fence line, and I was probably 10, 15 feet behind them. They banged the right because they knew I was going to catch them if they decided to go through the fence. They were running down the fence line, came to another fence line, and the first guy came and jumped through the fence in between the strands like Superman. It's pretty impressive.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they do that.
That's awesome. I mean, he made it through?
Oh, yeah. They do it all the time. Barbs everything. It scrapes them up.
Legality and all aside, he earned it.
Yeah.
He fucking earned it.
And like I said, it's pretty impressive to watch, man. Yeah. Superman in between barbed wire.
Yeah.
So the second guy, I was probably about 6 feet behind him. He hit the fence and flopped over. And I had body armor on, so I was like, you know what? I'm getting these guys. So I hit the fence and flopped over as well.
So you Supermaned it too?
No, I flopped over the fence.
Okay, cool. Because I was like, yo,
second, oh, no.
If you were like, hey, man, you think you're going to fucking top me, dude? It's like a slam dunk contest.
No,
I'll go
sir.
Right through that shit.
I've seen them do it, and I've seen what happens afterwards. I don't like it.
Yeah.
They can get away. Yeah. But so now all three of us are on the ground in this high grass on the other side. The first guy, Superman, got up and ran. He got away. And the second guy was getting up, and I got him by the legs, and I brought him back down, and we were tussling and wrestling. I was trying to get to my feet, and I don't know exactly how it happened, but I saw my boots and the stars in the same picture, and this fucker body slammed me on the ground, jumped on top of me, and grabbed me by the neck. So I pushed him off, but we were sweating, and my hand slipped off of him. So I'm on the ground, and he pinned this hand to the ground, and he had his right hand on my throat, and I had his shirt like this, and I'm like, oh, shit, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And all I kept looking around, all I could see was high grass. I can still smell his body odor because his sweat was dripping on my face. A bunch of things went through my mind. He had a polo shirt, and I kept thinking, if I can get to my gun, that's where I'm going to put the bullet. And I even thought, I'm going to have to turn my head. I might lose an eardrum.
Yeah.
And then I started seeing spots, and I said, you know what? I'm going to die. I said, God, please help me. And I don't know how I did it next, but I broke my right hand free. I struck him on the side. I struck him in the temple, and he fell off to the side. I rolled over on top of him, and I put my forearm into his throat. And at that time, now he's on the bottom.
Right.
I can feel him grabbing at my handcuffs.
Right.
At, my gun belt. And I got pepper spray, baton, weapon. So I said, all right, this is going to end here. So I wound my fist up here, and I punched him three times in the nose, felt his nose break on the second one.
Yeah.
And then after the third punch, he said, officer, please stop hitting me.
Yeah.
In Spanish, oficial, ya no me pegues. I said, well, stop fighting, fucker. No, no pelees, puto. You know? And I can hear on my earpiece the camera operator yelling for everybody to get to me. And I can see agents around me, but we were in the high grass. So I couldn't, you know. But once he actually gave up, I raised my hand and I guided the agents in. They dragged him and cuffed him up. And I actually lied on the ground for a good 2-3 minutes catching my breath. So he got sentenced to 57 months in prison.
Okay.
For assaulting a federal officer.
No, they didn't charge him with that.
Jesus Christ.
No.
For unlawful presence or what?
No, for drug smuggling.
Oh, for drug smuggling. Okay.
But the thing is, Dan, we in the Border Patrol get into so many altercations on a daily basis, and they don't even report this, that if we had to file assault on a federal agent with every time somebody assaulted a federal agent.
There's no way.
No way. I mean, have to have a resident FBI agent.
When I was there in 2016, and that's when I did most of my time, I think there were, out of the 500-some federal immigration judge slots, 275 were empty at the time. That's really, of all the things of you guys out in the audience that you didn't like about the Obama administration, the fucking, the constant progress towards war, the drone strike stuff, the shitty Affordable Care Act and all that, the worst thing that happened during that administration is they punted entirely on the entire immigration issue. They didn't do shit in 8 years to do anything about that. They didn't get judges in office. They didn't do anything about reform on policy stuff. They built all these cages that everybody was super upset about kids being in, which, by the way, they're back in now.
Yes.
Yeah. Now they retailored that language to say, for humanity's sake, for COVID, we've put the kids and women separately now. Like, oh, you mean back in the fucking cages that you were just bitching about
a month and a half ago?
Yeah. I mean, Jesus Christ, dude.
And what was the next picture here that you brought?
This is the dope he seized from those guys.
Okay, so this is the amount of dope that you seized from these guys.
What did you say, 800 pounds of weed?
800 pounds.
God, you could have just brought that to my house.
Yeah, Dan would have smoked
all that. It smelled good, too. I got to admit that.
I bet it did. But
that reminds me of that scene from Super Troopers where they're like, they do that big weed bust. He goes, hey, that weed you guys got, was there a weird sticker on it? And the guy like looks in his pocket like, no.
So the craziest thing is with the pictures that you've shown us and what you actually got arrested for, like, what the fuck is wrong with our country
if you put some guys on their knees out in there and just fucking executed them and left them there in the dirt, that's probably not great.
It's not great, right? But you would have been justified.
No, like, even like, but that's an extreme situation. What your experience is not extreme.
No, you got to remember this. I went to the Border Patrol from doing law enforcement in the Coast Guard, but I was a search and rescue agency.
Right.
I'm into saving lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. You know? Yeah. I'm into saving lives.
Yep.
But then they took my weapon away, and I was behind a desk for 18 months. Modified. Nobody told me anything then.
So you're on modified assignment for 18 months, gave you any information.
At the 14th.
I don't know this. I know that federal employees have a union, but is there a union specifically for 1811s and the what's the other one, 1801s and shit like that?
Right. The Border Patrol has the National Border Patrol Council, but back then it was pretty weak.
A PBA rep though, like in the police, so that you have.
But
that.
Back then, now it's a lot better since my case and a bunch of other cases that have happened. But back then it was pretty weak, and my union basically told me that they said, "Good luck. If you win your trial, we'll refund you 75% of your attorney's fees." Oh, I'm like, I need an attorney.
Yeah.
Bitches.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck, man?
But so at the 14-month mark, I got a letter saying that I was a target investigation. I gave the guy's name and the date. Mm. And here's the irony of this, part of the irony of this whole story. The guy I pushed on the ground, his first middle name were Miguel Angel. Mm. Miguel Angel. Miguel Angel. So was the drug smuggler, but they had different last names. So I thought I was being prosecuted for the whole drug smuggler thing because I broke the guy's nose.
Ah. Oh, God.
So for 14 months, I'm sitting here going, what did I do? I said I went through every level of use of force. I used to teach the use of force in the Coast Guard, so I know it very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I'm like, what did I do? I said officer presence, verbal commands, soft empty hand, hard empty hand. I said, the guy's still alive, and he was about to kill me.
Yeah.
I was like, what did I do wrong? Then, and in strange government matter, when I got the guy's name, I was like, who is this guy? When I went to the computer, there was about a 6-week block of things that were gone from the computer. So I went to the hard files, the paperwork. That specific case was gone, disappeared.
Isn't that, you have the constitutional right to due process regardless if you're a federal agent or not, which means discovery comes into that. Before the trial, you have to be giving any evidence, right? And the process of trying to hide evidence even before discovery is due is a crime, right? I'm asking if you filed any lawsuits about that 14-month gap, because I think you might have a case there, frankly.
No. Like I said, back then, I was real naive to it. And now,
if there's no statute of limitations on government.
It's 20 years ago, man.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's no statute of limitations on being able to sue the federal government.
Yeah, if you wanted that. But financially,
I would at least look into it because honestly,
it's going in my book.
It's less about the money and more about the precedent
Right.
Not allowing it to happen to the next guy. That's the
I understand,
important
but
part.
Financially for him to pay attorneys that, unless you find somebody pro bono.
Natalie Kwan would probably do that for you. She works with veterans quite a bit.
Really? Speaking of which, yeah. Richard Stayskow is actually coming back on the show here pretty soon to give us an update on that. So, we'd be happy to give you Natalie's number. But
I love it.
Yeah.
She could look into it. I think you might have a case there because, isolating you and keeping you away from the facts, it takes away your fucking right to self-defense, right? You can't, they cannot do that. Absolutely
when I went to trial, Dan, I went to trial at the 18-month mark, all right, because I got put on investigation in March of 2001. My trial started in October of 2002.
Right.
Not once did I speak to an investigator. Not once did anybody ask me my version of the story about, hey, what happened that night? Until I was on the stand in a courtroom and my attorney asked me.
Why didn't your attorney, was he appointed by the government or?
No, I couldn't find an attorney that I can afford.
So who gave?
So I actually found one in Houston.
Gotcha.
Don't know if he was the best one because we actually lost and he's dead now, but.
Doesn't sound like it.
Well, you didn't know you were the target of an investigation until like 14 out months. Of the 18 months in.
Well,
right?
I knew I was getting investigated. I didn't know why.
Right. Yeah. So you didn't. Like, he had no way to prepare himself.
Right. And I couldn't find an attorney until I knew why.
Well, even if you had found an attorney, what the fuck would he have done?
Exactly.
Stupid
without
question.
Any information.
But why didn't Border Patrol provide one for you?
That's what I was asking about the PBA thing. Like, if there's no, union sucks. Even the Federal Employees Union, the FEU now sucks. So I can't imagine how bad it was back then.
Right now, the Border Patrol has a much better union there and with a bunch of other, like FLEOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Association, and CLEAT, and... But back then, 20 years ago, they weren't. So it was basically on them. And basically back then, what the Border Patrol Union did was collect money and good luck.
Jesus Christ. Yes. It sounds so unbelievable. Forgive me for sounding shocked over and over and over again. But it's one of those things that you hear about and you're like, this seems like a fucking Dateline case on like a Friday night. Yeah. That you would watch and be like, man, that guy got fucked for 20 years.
Brother, that's why I have the support that I have from so many law enforcement officers across the country.
Yeah.
You know, because... What I did, I never denied, and I did what I was taught.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, on social media and you know, throughout the past 20 years and stuff, I get a lot of hate and stuff, but they read the DOJ press release.
Sure.
You know, because that's what they put out. Because anybody that's never been charged by the federal government doesn't know that if the federal government decides, hey, Ross, you know what? You kicked the shit out of these two guys, and we're charging you with it. And even though you didn't and say you didn't, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, we're going to prove that you did. And by the time it's done, you did it.
Yeah, you can't sue the Department of Justice for defamation, for example.
No.
And as a matter of fact, you have to get permission from Congress to sue the federal government at all.
Yeah.
I mean, brother, right now, a perfect example is look at President Trump.
Yeah.
They're telling him, you did this.
Yeah.
Well, that's been going on for 4 years.
Right. I mean,
apparently, it was okay.
20.
It was
for him.
Yeah. It was okay to undermine the sanctity of our electoral process to accuse Trump of colluding with Russia for 4 years, but not okay for them to ask about any kind of strange shit that may have happened this year. Those are the two very different things, apparently.
And then they wanted him to testify for the impeachment thing. Like,
oh, he should totally show up.
He said no. I was surprised he said no, but it would have been awesome.
That's probably the smartest thing he's ever done because one of the worst things that I did during my trial was testify.
Yeah, so we'll get to that now. Even going up to testify, right? In court that day, you're walking up to the stand. You still know in your heart that you did nothing wrong whatsoever.
Correct.
So you're probably walking up to say, all right, great. You want my side of the story? Here's my side of the story. It's pretty easy.
I don't want to get in your way of answering that. But if from my perspective, having worked there and been in the military and dealt with shitty command, you were probably fucking super anxious walking in the room. You probably felt like you were getting fucked before you even got there. Right? I mean, that's how I would have felt.
I did, but like I said, I was 30 something years old back then, and I was a lot more. I'm 54 years old now, so I was in my 34 years old.
Yeah,
and 33 maybe. But I still believed in the halls of justice. I believed in my system.
Yeah.
I had been working for the government for so long. I believed in what I was doing.
I think it's an important, it's really important for people to see the non-stereotypical person get fucked over by the government. So it's not a 17-year-old black kid from the streets or anything. Like, it's a dude who served his country and then did what he was trained to do and still got fucked over.
Yeah.
If that's not enough, if all these people that have doubts, if that's not enough evidence that there's a problem with our criminal justice system and the way we treat not only people in general, but particularly people who serve our communities, right? then you're never going to learn that lesson if you don't learn it here.
Before we get to the rest of your story, man, and I fucking hate to interrupt you, dude. We have sponsors that pay for the show to be on the air. So forgive us, Gary, but we'll try to knock these out here because your life is unbelievably fascinating here. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinking bros. 40% off the bundle package right now. The adjustable base is included in that bundle package. I'd highly, highly recommend it. Go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros today. Use promo code drinking bros at checkout. You'll get 40% off everything in the entire store when you bundle it together. That is sheets, mattresses, pillows, adjustable bases, you name it, they got it at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. And as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program, no interest there. And that 40% off bundle package is applicable with that deal. Next up, we've got Candid. CandidCO.com. That is CandidCO.com/drinking bros. This is a new one here. If you were unhappy with your smile, you don't have to be. These are the clear braces that everybody's wearing. The retainer just pops into your mouth.
Yeah, it's another one of those industries that were ahead of its time with the telemedicine and getting stuff to your home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They were really ahead of their time, and I'm glad that now people are becoming more and more comfortable with that, using, you know, Roman and, you know, other types of medications to get through the mail.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Capsule, who we've talked about yesterday, I believe, and we'll be talking about more in the future. This is really good to work with companies like that. We like these guys.
It's great, man. Candid's here to straighten your teeth. You've seen these everywhere you go. You're like, all right, cool. What's that clear thing in that guy's mouth? It's a retainer. It is the new form of braces. Dude, I had braces for fucking 8 years growing up, and it was miserable. Where was this when I was growing up? Your treatment is prescribed and closely monitored by a licensed orthodontist who's an expert in tooth movements. You'll have the same quality of care you'd get from an in-house orthodontist. And like Dan was saying, man, you can just do this from your house now, and they'll just ship it to you. While other companies use like general dentists, Candid works with only orthodontists. And there is a big difference. Again, I was a kid who had braces for 8 years growing up. I spent more time with my orthodontist than I did with my own grandparents, probably. So the orthodontist that created your plan from start to finish will be the same person. Average treatment is right around 6 months, and you'll start seeing results way before then, and it costs thousands of dollars less than traditional braces. Become your best you. Start straightening your teeth today. Right now, you can save $75 on Candid's starter kit. Go to CandidCO.com/drinking bros and use the promo code drinking bros. That's CandidCO.com/drinking bros, promo code drinking bros. Take advantage of this limited time offer to save $75 on your starter kit. CandidCO/drinking bros and use that promo code drinking bros for $75 off. Last but not least, we've got MacWeldon.com/drinking bros. Big fan of these guys. 20% yeah. off. Again, this, everybody knows Mac Weldon. It's one of those things where everybody's like, yo, can we get a promo code for this shit? I'm like, it's pricey. I hope so. They typically don't do shit like this, but they are now.
There's not a lot of places online where you can go shop for all your dude shit.
Yep.
Like socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, active wear, all that stuff in one place. I mean, I guess you could do it in one of the retail outlets, but who wants to do that shit? You
know
what I mean? I want to go to a place. I don't want to go to a place that specializes in selling things. I want to go to a place that specializes in selling the exact thing I'm looking for.
Yep.
And that's what Mac Weldon does. They make great stuff for dudes.
Yeah, so they've created a totally free loyalty program. Level one gets you free shipping for life. Level two, you reach by spending $200. Mac Weldon gives you 20% off of every order for the next year. So once you're in, you're in. You get 20% off forever. And man, half the shit that I wear, you can only see my top parts on this show. My bottom parts are always Mac Weldon. That's legit, man. Every time everybody's like, you look so goddamn comfortable all the time, and I'm like, well, that's why.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, a nice boxer brief will really treat your brethren right.
Yeah, you know damn
I mean?
Right.
I mean, it really does, and it's, if you don't want to be walking around uncomfortable all day.
No,
everybody
no, you don't.
Like, there's been this transition, I guess, over the last 20 years where like tough dudes, you know, you had to wear a t-shirt and jeans everywhere all the time, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Maybe some boots.
Yeah.
Or tennis shoes or whatever the fuck. then that whole metrosexual trend kind of started, right?
Yeah.
Dudes started taking care of themselves, and a lot of people were like, oh, that's kind of weird. What are you shaving your eyebrows or something? Like, well, I don't want to look like a fucking homeless asshole.
Yes, dude. Yeah, I do all of the things.
Yeah. Like, why? I don't understand why that was such an issue of masculinity back in the day. Yeah. Look nice and presentable. The clothes you wear is, you know, it's marketing. You're marketing to pussy. Let's be real. You're trying to get laid, man.
You're trying to get laid, brother.
Don't be an asshole. Dress like an adult.
Exactly. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com/drinkingbros and enter the promo code drinkingbros. Again, that's macweldon.com/drinkingbros. Promo code drinkingbros gets you 20% off your first order. Big fan of these guys. Mm-hmm. So apologize, Gary, but you know, that's the reason we're here today is because of our sponsors. Mm-hmm. And we're grateful to them. Yeah, so you go up on the stand, you testify, and what do they say to combat your story?
All right, so this is a three,
I mean, what
circus.
Evidence did they have other than the fact that these two illegal aliens who are actively committing a crime?
They only brought one.
Yeah
They only brought one. But this is a three-ring circus. So check this out. Trial started on a Monday.
Uh-huh.
All right. 2002.
Yep.
October. Started on a Monday. Monday morning, jury selection to about noon. All right. About 11:30. Then we adjourned for lunch. Mm-hmm. Came back around 1 p.m. 1 p.m., the trial started. The government brought in the illegal alien. Then they brought in the two agents, the trainee agent and his journeyman, his FTO, who was a friend of mine to testify. The agent was the first. I take that back. The agent, the trainee agent, was the first one to testify.
Okay.
He testified that he couldn't believe what he was seeing because he had everything under control. And I ran up and I kicked this guy on the ground, and I said, "So you want to run, huh?" And I proceeded to punch him in the torso so hard that he can hear the guy's breaths coming out, going ugh. Then I grabbed a second guy, threw him on top of the first guy, punched him, and possibly some punches to a third guy.
Now, why did he say this?
I don't know. And the only thing I can come up with is I was an agent for a while, worked for the government for a while. The U.S. attorney will try to turn you into their side. So he was a freshly new little boot. So they probably got him and said, hey, this is Plato. We can mold him however we want.
What's his name?
Marcelino Alegria.
Is he still alive today?
He is. He's a supervisor down in Zapata, Texas.
Really?
Yeah.
Sure, his career is doing fine.
So check this out. Here comes the kicker. All right. The illegal alien was the second witness.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I ran up and I pushed him on the ground, but I never punched him. He testified I never punched him. Says he never laid a hand on me, but I put my knee in his neck and put his neck in his face in the ground, which I also didn't do, but he says I didn't punch him.
So
not a single hit.
He couldn't corroborate
what
the other agent testified before him. So what does your lawyer do afterwards?
Well, we tried objecting, but the judge wasn't having it. The judge that we had, y'all ain't from Texas, so y'all wouldn't know. His name is William Wayne Justice. He was appointed by LBJ. At the time, was the senior most federal judge in Texas.
Uh-huh.
And he's a very liberal judge.
Is he alive today?
No, he died.
Yeah.
So my lawyer has me stand up in the courtroom, and he asked the illegal alien, is this the guy that kicked you? And the guy looks at me, he's like, I don't know. I never saw his face. But I never denied what I did. You know, I could have just said, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
I could have just said, it wasn't me. He can't identify me. It was one of them two.
Yeah.
But, you know, integrity, right?
Right, yeah.
Doing the right thing even though nobody's looking.
Right,
sure.
I never denied what I did because what I did was what I was taught. So,
well, it's more important than the adjudication of your individual case. Like, that has to be part of the use of force, and that has to be okay for people to do because it's a matter of officer safety at that point.
Right.
You have to be able to use some amount of force. Otherwise, what the fuck are we doing here? You know what I mean?
Well, Border Patrol agents get rocked all the time.
Oh,
they throw rocks at us.
Yeah.
Janet Reno, when she was the attorney general, said that we had to run away. It was our job to run away if somebody's throwing rocks at us. And I said this on several radio shows, and I don't recommend anybody doing it, okay?
Right.
But next time you get pulled over, imagine this. You get pulled over by a sheriff's deputy, police officer, state trooper, pick up a brick.
Yeah, and just go and see what happens.
See if they run away.
Yeah, right. See what happens.
But Ross,
So when you but when you're there, right, you give your side of the story to your lawyer. In cross examination, what did they say back in return to this? Of like, all right, well, the guy didn't see you. The first guy is the agent is testifying to something completely different than their clients, so to speak. What's the cross examination like from them to prove that you actually did this?
The assistant U.S. attorney, Bill Bauman, comes up and he has me read part of the use of force that he's got underlined. Mm-hmm. And I start reading the whole thing. He goes, no, just read the part that's underlined. I said, you can't.
It's a continuum, bitch.
Right. You can't.
It says use of force continuum.
Right. Yeah. And I told him, you can't pick and choose from your little static environment where you're at what I'm going to do in the field. This is just a guideline. He snatches it out of my hand from the bench. Yeah. I was sitting on the bench. He goes, this is the second time I've heard this use of force policy referred to as a guideline. Yeah. Is that what you think of the Constitution? So I said, can I see that? And the judge made him give it back to me, and I went to the back, and it says summary, and it said, because I taught this before, I know what it says.
Yeah.
It says, this use of force policy is for agents to use as a guideline.
It literally says it specifically in the use of force. And the reason it says that is because, let's just say you're working on a five base use of force, so one is no force, five is deadly force, right? You don't have to go through every single one of those. If I'm like talking to you first, and then I go open hands with you, first, right, and then all of a sudden you pull a weapon, I'm going to five, you're gonna die,
right?
Right. Yeah, I have to go through three, four before I go to five.
You don't have to.
This is like that's the reason. You have to have some kind of fucking trust and the training and the integrity of the officer in the first place to reasonably manage this shit, right? Here's what we don't see. Despite all the rhetoric around Border Patrol and how racist America is and blah 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 and all this shit about Mexicans and Guatemalans coming to this country, you don't see fucking people getting beheaded or shot to death,
sir,
on the border, because it would be fucking news, believe me. If AOC can make news out of an empty parking lot down there, I'm pretty sure one dead body would be on the fucking front page of every goddamn liberal newspaper in this country. You never see it. You literally never see that shit, ever.
So what was his response to that once you showed him the guidelines and everything else?
He snatched it out of my hands, and he says, well, why did you have to kick him to the ground? He goes, why can't you just ask him to sit down nicely?
Ask him to sit down nicely.
And he kind of put his hands like that, made that. And
you should have challenged him to a wrestling match right there in the courtroom. Like, seriously, I mean, it sounds absurd, but like, I'm going to try to fucking get away. You wrestle me to the ground and we'll see how it works out. Yeah.
So I asked the judge, and I knelt down and I said, come put your hands on me, sir. And he said, why? And I said, just do it. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Why not? Because I don't know what you're going to do. And I said, exactly. And you're here in front of a judge, jury, and a district court officer, but what, you want me to do it out in the field?
Yeah.
And veins popped out of his head. But hold on. So, real quick, not too deep, but the third agent, the FTO, testified that he was 80 yards away. He didn't see me punch anybody, but he can hear the kick from 80 yards away, three quarters of a football field.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
But the illegal alien couldn't remember what side I kicked him on. So, but here's the other part. So I thought that was it.
I don't know if it was the case back then, but there's full-on photographs taken anytime you take anybody into custody on the border, right? Or any of those waypoints inside the border. It's not just the actual border that's guarded. There's like 400 miles, and then it depends on, like, there's Border Patrol checkpoints in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because those are major throughways and shit like that. Anyways,
Was there photographs of his body?
Yeah, you take photographs of the body. If you kick somebody hard enough for somebody to hear it 80 yards away in a field with tall grass and shit like that out there in the middle of nowhere, holy shit, dude. I mean,
was there photographs of the victim?
Yeah. They wouldn't allow him. The judge wouldn't allow him.
Why?
Because it was incriminating evidence towards the illegal alien. Wouldn't admit him.
He just
wouldn't.
That's actually him. I know that sucks, but that is actually something that happens in the court of law. If that guy has to defend himself later in court, then you can't introduce evidence that would violate his Fifth Amendment right.
Now,
for example,
but hold
like
on.
That.
So, but the Mexican consulate had pictures of him, and they allowed those, but they wouldn't allow mine. Like that picture that I showed you after the fight with the dope smuggler.
Uh-huh.
This dope smuggler comes into the court case here in a minute. They wouldn't allow that picture.
Really?
They would not allow that picture. The judge would not allow it.
Okay.
So by the trial started Monday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
By 10:30 in the morning on Tuesday morning, the government was done with what I had been charged
with. Wait, I'm sorry. Say that again. Say the date and time.
On the jury selection started Monday morning.
Yep.
Trial started Monday afternoon. Tuesday morning at 10:30, the prosecution was done with what I was being charged with. But they wanted to allow some more evidence. So the lawyers went up to the bench. They spoke a little bit for about 10 minutes, came back. I said, what's going on? Mm. My lawyer's telling me, he goes, they're going to bring in a dope smuggler. I'm like, what? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's got nothing to do with this. It happened 6 weeks later. Mm. And all of a sudden, now let me set it up for you. I'm here next to my attorney.
Right.
The judge and the bench are over here. Mm-hmm. The prosecution's over there. The benches, the pews, and the doors are over there. The doors open up, and in walks this guy. Now he's got long hair. He looks a little more meek. He was about maybe 5'4", mm-hmm. but man, he was a brick shit house.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So he starts walking in, and he's got a U.S. Marshal in tow because they ridded the drug smuggler out of prison to come testify against me. And the guy walked in, and he scanned the room, and when he saw me, his eyes focused on me, and as he was walking towards the bench the whole time, his eyes were on me. So I saw him come in, and I was like, I stood up. And the whole time till he got to the bench, he sat down. It wasn't until he was sat down with the marshal behind him that I sat in my chair. I crossed my arms, and for the next 4 hours, me and him, Ross, were like this.
Why did you stand up?
I don't know if you've had anybody ever try to kill you with their bare hands. But if they did, and they put that same dude in a room with you the next time around, I'm not going to be sitting down when it happens.
What, did part of you think, all right, if I stand up
here, I got scared.
Gotcha.
I got scared. This last thing I remember of this guy, he was choking me out in the middle of a field in tall grass.
Sure.
You know? And now he's in the same room with me.
Did any part of you think, all right, if I am standing up, it's going to be viewed as a threatening position, and this is part of... This will be viewed as part of my behavior.
You don't think about it.
I understand, but yeah.
But even if you had thought about it, and or if you had had the wherewithal to do that, there's no way your brain reacts that quickly. Your brain.
No. I'm not saying your brain does, but I'm saying I'm sure the judge and jury, looked at it that way of like, oh, here's this guy being aggressive again. And
that's because you shouldn't be judged on your actions as an officer like that by people that don't understand what the fuck's going on the ground.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Look, I 100% agree. Yes,
If I in war do something that seems unseemly and I get tried, there's a reason for military tribunals, mm-hmm. right? There's a reason they don't send that to civilian court because it's not the same fucking thing. And the fact that we're going to bring in a civilian court to determine whether or not something was too aggressive when somebody's trying to interdict a crime and a violent crime at that, mm-hmm. that's ridiculous, right?
Right.
That's like bringing in a fucking librarian to figure out what our physicist guy was talking about a few minutes ago.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's a not complete non sequitur. Why? Just because you know what general right and wrong is as a society, if you're a member, if you're a civilian in society, that doesn't give you any context into what it means to be in a fight for your life with no backup coming.
People cannot
contextualize that.
I understand. So for 4 hours, you're locked in a virtual staring match with this guy. What does he say as he's testifying?
He's locked with me. Mm-hmm. His eyes are locked with me. He's got an interpreter because he doesn't speak English. And every time he's asked a question, he turns towards the jury, answers a question, turns back towards me.
So he was definitely coached on that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, he tells the story that I just told you about me chasing him down, except he didn't go through a barbed wire fence. He tripped. He tripped, and I caught him because I wasn't going to be able to catch him otherwise. So he tripped, and then I pinned him down, and I put my gloves on, and I then proceeded to beat him.
You carefully took your time, put your gloves on, and then proceeded to beat him.
Yeah, and he put some wax in his mustache and twisted it up at the end. Fuck out of here.
Yeah. So
none of these people have ever been in a fist fight in their lives. Anybody, I bet juries, despite the fucking racist history in the South in this country, I bet juries for stuff like this were probably a lot more reasonable back then. People that had been...
It was an Austin jury.
Like people, I know, but that was like in 2000. I'm talking about like in the 80s, 70s, 60s.
Right.
Worse shit was going on back then, but I bet their frame of reference is that if I talk too much shit, or if I get up in somebody's face and threaten them, they're going to punch me in the fucking face. And that's expected and reasonable for that to happen, by the way.
Yeah.
Like we've gotten so soft about this stuff. It's so bizarre.
Let me tell you, did your lawyer object to this at all?
Overruled.
It was overruled. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's funny how we use, how we have used historically. If you think about any of the major cases of law enforcement or federal agents that have been charged and convicted of things, where they use criminals, right, with an axe to grind as witnesses against them, that is fucking bananas to me.
I'm telling you.
You know what I mean? Like, you immediately, as a reasonable human being, if somebody that he had just put in jail for, what was it, 56 months, you said?
57 months.
Somebody he just put in jail for several years, right, now is going to come testify against me. You don't question the integrity of that man's fucking testimony?
Hey, would you like to go home?
Yeah,
we need you to testify against this agent in another case.
Did he get to go home after
that? He did.
He did.
Well, after that, there was to this day, there's no record of him in the federal system, in the Federal Bureau of Prison system. And after that, his records were sealed and nobody can find him.
Why did the government spend so much time, money, and effort trying to convict you, who actually works for the government itself, and then let the criminals go? Like, I'm mystified.
Well, here's
this.
Another question for you, Ross, and if you can answer this one, I will fucking quit, and this will be my last show.
Sure.
Why are there 11 to 12 million illegal immigrants in this country right now?
I think, me personally,
I mean, there's no legit answer to the question.
Well, neither side will do anything. I think Democrats and Republicans have both punted on this issue for years and years and years. Do something one way or the other.
There is a very legitimate answer to this question, by the way, what should be done on the border. And it's what I wrote my master's thesis on in Germany and Poland. Right. So Germany had a huge problem with Polish immigrants coming across the border and working illegally. It was causing inflation. Right. It was causing all these jobs that used to pay, let's say it's $25 an hour, U.S. standard, right? All these jobs we're paying like that, we're now paying $7 an hour to illegals because they don't pay taxes. All this revenue is missing. There's illegal shit going on. You can't track the people coming in and out, blah, blah, blah. Everything that comes with the smuggling portion that is attached to that, right?
Sure.
So what did Germany do? Germany said, we're going to issue work permits to Polish people, pretty much anybody that wants one. As long as you can prove that you're not an asshole, we'll issue a work permit. You can come over here and work for however long you want. Go back and forth, blah, blah, blah. If you were a German company and you hire somebody that does not have that card, your business is shut down. All of your assets are liquidated and you go to jail, right? That's step one, obviously. Step two is to start leveraging some of the goddamn technology we've got. What the fuck are we doing, man? He's talking about 20 fucking years ago. We have these thermal scanners with a 5-mile range. What do you think we have now?
Oh, yeah.
You think you can fucking hide? We're going to build a goddamn border wall? I mean, look, a border wall could be, I guess, a layer in defense. I don't think it's necessary, but we can literally cover all the entire border with drones and have helicopter fucking direct action teams like Nest teams, the way they're set up and stuff like that, that interdict this stuff. So much. And then seismographic thermal scans of the ground to find these tunnels. There's so much
thousands
stuff.
Of sensors.
There's so much stuff that we can fucking do.
But none of that works, Dan, unless
there's a man.
Unless you let the agents enforce the laws that they're supposed to enforce. Yeah. Let the agents do their damn jobs.
I mean, it's an interesting theory. Like, obviously, we don't want to fucking abuse people.
No, of course not.
In particular, we don't want to abuse people that have already been abused, and the reason they're coming here is because America's awesome. Like, they're not coming here because it
Land
sucks.
Of milk and honey.
It's not a fucking insult that Mexicans and Guatemalans are trying to get into our country.
Right.
It's probably the best thing that anybody could ever say about us. We want what you guys have.
Yeah.
Right? Not that we should give it to everybody, right? Obviously, we can't do that, and I think like Milo says, it should be some mix between compassion and then what we need as a country bringing in. I agree with him completely on that, but anyways, we have to set the standard. Like, if you don't follow the rules, you get fucked up. You know what I mean?
Well, here's what happens. You're a case, a living case. So,
yes, sir.
All right, great. You come in and you try to enforce the rules.
Right.
And what does your lawyer say in his cross then back to this fucking prisoner?
Everything that we said was either overruled or not allowed by the judge. And the Border Patrol is really hardcore because they don't support a lot of agents in anything that they do. Ironically, in my case, all my bosses testified on my behalf, which is something that's unheard of. Even to this day, I talk to agents and they tell me they stood up for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get into a courtroom and, you know, get into legalities, nobody wants to hear it. you know. And all my bosses said, if he's on trial for this, we should all be on trial for this. Yeah. We testified to that. He actually, one of my bosses testified that I was a truthful agent, and the government objected, says, well, he hasn't testified. We don't know if he's a truthful agent, you know. So they and at the very end, in closing arguments, but before I get to that,
sure,
they had the U.S. attorney. Mm. They had a lady there that was putting all these projections up on the wall. They had the Mexican consulate sitting in the first pew so they can lean over and talk to him. And they brought in a civil rights trial lawyer from Washington, D.C. by the name of Brent Allen Gray.
Okay.
And this guy was good because during closing arguments for a split second, he had me convinced I was guilty. But during one of the breaks, it was right before Halloween because it was October 28th or 29th around the time. And we were in the restroom in the Austin Federal Courthouse. Mm. And
Brent Gay works for the Department of Justice now, by the way.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just looked it up.
Well, he was a U.S. attorney back then. I think now he's a prosecutor.
Criminal section. Yeah, he's a prosecutor in the Civil Rights Division.
Right. Well, that's what he... That's
and
what
he's
he
an LSU graduate, so...
Yeah.
There you go. Well, there you
so go. He comes into the restroom, and I'm using the restroom, and, you know, we got the stall. We're looking. I'm not peeking, right?
Sure.
And he says, Halloween in Texas... Halloween in Austin, Texas. Asked me if I was going out. And I said, no, are you? And he says, no, I got a trial to win. And so I... Do you really think I did this? You really think I'm guilty of this? He goes, doesn't matter what I think. He goes, I got a $50 million budget. Make sure you go to prison. And you're going to prison. It just matters how long.
Yeah, it's funny. That's a good analog to the fact. We talked about it about 2 weeks ago, I think, on the show. There are a handful of states, more than should exist. Obviously, none should exist. But there are a handful of states in this country that have contracts with private prisons where they're required to keep a certain amount
the feds
of people.
Do.
Yeah, the federal government does too. Yeah,
Geo.
So yeah, there's. I think the federal. I think there's 30 federal facilities, if I'm not mistaken. I had to look that number up again, but I'm pretty sure there's 30 federal facilities that have contracts with private prison systems where they're required to keep a certain amount of people in prison all the time.
Right.
I mean, that is fucked.
I understand, but back to this. Did you say to him like afterwards, like?
I was speechless.
Do you think this is fair?
He smiled at me and said, see you in court, like that. And I just felt this bucket of warm water come over me. It felt like I was pissing my pants. I was like, I felt like somebody dumped a bucket of warm water over me, Ross. And it was just unreal.
Did you feel like you were fucked at that point?
I knew it.
You did.
I knew it.
You did.
But I still had faith because the truth, mm-hmm. the truth. So basically... After 5 days, they deliberated for 4 hours. At one point, they wanted some trial testimony. The judge denied it. Says, nope, you can remember what happened. It wasn't too long ago. And I got found guilty.
I'm sorry, he said it. You could remember it. It wasn't too long ago. Like that part of the trial or the actual event?
No, the trial. Mm. Because they wanted some trial testimony, transcripts. Yeah, yeah. And the judge said no.
When you say 5 days, 4 hours, was it 4 hours a day for 5 days?
No, or? it was 4 hour deliberation.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Oh, so after 4 hours, did your lawyer lean over to you and say, hey man, they got you?
Yeah. Like, this well, is... you know, at that point...
Because I'm sure you're asking, right?
I actually thought I was going to get off of it because what did they have?
Yeah.
You know, what did they have? They had a drug smuggler, and during the closing arguments, the U.S. attorney came and spoke from the podium... to the jury. My lawyer came and spoke to the jury because you got 40 minutes. Yeah. So the U.S. attorney spoke for 20 minutes. My lawyer spoke for 40. And then this Brent Allen Gray guy grabbed the podium, walked in front of the jury and started preaching like it was a church choir.
Sure.
And that's when I said at one point he had me convinced I was guilty. And he basically made all my supervisors and everybody that had 20, 30 years in the Border Patrol look like liars. And made this trainee agent out to be the superhero, which is where all that documentation comes from. Well, he said he punched him, so it must have happened. And I got found guilty. And when they read the guilty verdict, the judge kind of looked up like this. Well, they gave it to the judge first, and the judge kind of surprised. And then they read it, and the court stenographer was like, she said like that. And there goes that bucket of warm water again. I didn't know what to feel. And I almost jumped off the bridge at Congress that night, you know, Congress and Columbia River right there.
Now during this, do they tell you how many years you're going away for?
No, there's a whole other sentencing phase.
Yeah, you get to go home. Yeah. So how long were you home for?
You were probably held in confinement for that time, right?
No, they wanted to take me in right there, but the judge left me out pending an appeal. I was actually out for over a year because the trial was in October 2002, and I didn't lose the appeal till March 2004. So during that whole time, I was working. I moved to San Antonio. I was working, and I started getting my college degree. And I'm in emergency management because I was like, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I like saving people. I like helping people.
Having a CEM certified emergency manager, there's 1,600 of those in the world, by the way. It's a very high paying job. So it's a smart move.
So in I went to the Court of Appeals, and I can't remember the exact day, but it was late 2003. And they had three judges, and then once again, I thought, wow, I looked at the marble walls, the halls of justice, and I thought, okay, this is going to be made right here. And from what I heard that day, I thought I was scot-free because the judges chewed the government's ass because they sent this girl, her name was Tova Calderon, and she had a binder. And my attorney made the case, and they asked him some questions, and then they asked her something. And she was
it your same attorney from the
same
trial?
Attorney? Okay. Yeah. The judge allowed me to have the same attorney. Normally, you don't.
Yeah.
But the judge allowed it, and she was going through the case, and she kept. They asked her questions. She kept going through the binder, and they asked her, "Do you not know this case?" She goes, "No, I was handed this case." He goes, "Oh, so this is such an important case to the government that the prosecutors that started this case couldn't even be here for it. So they sent you."
Yeah, they sent an associate who just probably got her degree.
Right.
Right.
I thought I had won. And they asked her a bunch of questions and they said, "Is that all he did?" But then 3 weeks later, they wrote the complete opposite of what they had said in court, and they upheld the decision.
Why was that?
It's political pressure. I mean, look, there, you
no idea.
Obviously, there's no real point in speculating, but I'd like to do it because it's interesting. The fact that the Mexican consul was so involved probably means there was some other kind of deal going on at the time, and they just, for whatever reason, got hyped up about this case and wanted something to happen. Otherwise, this other thing that we were going to do for you is not going to happen.
But why a case always, this it, minor?
It's like, always quid pro quo.
I understand that, but you always hear about you know, border security and border patrol agents like shooting people and things like that. Why something this small and petty? Why spend the time, money, and energy into something like this?
All I can say of what I know is I was a big drug catcher. I was a big narcotics buster. I stumbled upon it. I could be walking down in the brush and trip over it and find it.
Right.
All right.
Which probably means in real life you're kind of a dirtbag because they always make the best ones, right? That's why the DEA sucks, by the way, because if you on your paperwork for the DEA, if they're like, hey, do you drink more than 3 times a week? Do you ever smoked weed in your life? And you say yes to any of that shit, you're out. Like, how are we supposed to send guys that don't know what drugs look like to go find drug dealers?
Right.
That's why DEA stands for don't expect anything.
Exactly.
And the federal, I'm not even kidding. That's what most other agencies refer to it as. It's fucking bullshit. Anyway.
So you think because of how many cases you fucking made, they had some.
It's the only thing I can think of because they were trying to appease Mexico. Now, again, looking back 20 years later, some things happened before that I didn't associate with it, and I can't prove anything.
To you or to...
To me.
Okay.
To me. So this all started in January 2014 when I pushed this guy on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Wait, 2014?
2001, I'm sorry. 2001.
Yeah.
January 14th,
yes, 2001. There it is, yeah. Yeah, I'm confused for a second.
In 2000, in October of 2000, I think it was, I was working the brush, and I got called out to sector. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, this is me thinking back of what could have been.
Right.
The chief wanted to see me. The chief of Del Rio sector, Paul Berg, wanted to see me. I'm like, I'm in the brush. It's going to take me 3.5 hours to get there. And they said, stand by. They told me to start marching. So I ended up going to sector. Got to sector. They said, they're waiting for you. I was like, they? They were like, yes, they. So I go in there, and it's the chief with 2 FBI agents. And I don't remember their names. Apparently, the Gulf Cartel had put a $2.5 million bounty on my head.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to go work in Montana, It was October. I was like, Montana, it's cold up there. You know? Well, can I go in Miami? Oh, no, we can't adequately protect you in Miami. I was right. like, adequately protect me? You said you've known about this for 3 weeks. I didn't see you marching behind me in the brush just now trying to protect me.
Yeah.
So I asked the chief, I said, do I have to go? And they said, well, you don't have to do anything. So I said, nah, I'm good. Thanks. And that was it. That's all I ever heard about that. 6 months later, I'm on trial. Now, is it connected? I don't know. I can't prove it. But that happened.
Sure.
Is it?
After all of this, right? Because that job is not high paying whatsoever. Why does anyone want to do this? Especially after hearing your story.
Well, to me, it's the best job in the world. I would go back tomorrow.
To this day.
I would go back tomorrow if they let me. Love that job. Love protecting the country. Here's the deal. I was in the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. I tried 3 times to get into the Border Patrol. The first time was in like 92, and I got accepted, but Hurricane Andrew, I was stationed in Miami. Hurricane Andrew came through, wiped us out. I got transferred to Fort Lauderdale. I never got my acceptance letter. So the next time I tried was in, I think it was 96, and I got accepted, but they hadn't sent me the acceptance letter, and I had a wife and a kid, and I didn't know what to do, and I said, where's my letter? And they said, well, it's coming. We just haven't, you know, officially done it yet.
I mean, the federal government.
So I ended up extending for 2 years, and then 2 weeks after my extension, I got my acceptance.
You get your letter for Fletzy? Like, here you go, buddy. Exactly. You're like, oh, thanks, asshole.
Report to San Diego.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. So the third time, I got discharged from active duty on February 22nd, 1998, and I was in Del Rio, Texas, swearing in on February 23rd, Monday morning. And to me, when I was working the border, when I first got on, I was like, I am the forefront of our country's defense. I am right here on the line.
Right.
I loved it, bro. I loved it. Still love it to this day. Most of my family and bros are Border Patrol agents.
Yeah, look, Rocco, one of our former co-hosts.
He was at my station.
Yes, dude. Yeah. He talks about the love for it as well. And I asked him the same question, which is why I asked you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like a very unique opportunity, really.
Well, he just said the pride of the country and what it's like to be an American and to protect the country, very similar to what you had said.
First line of defense.
And I'm sure this is going through your mind as you're being sentenced. And then when they tell you how long you're going to prison for, what's your thought then?
I knew I was going to prison. Didn't know for how long. They were pushing for 7 years. So I actually got the bottom. I got the minimum, which was 27 months. Mm. And it hurt. It hurt after so many years of, you know, I was in the Coast Guard. I was a bosun's mate. So I drove rescue boats through the seas and through the surf and put my life and my crew's lives on the line to save other people. And all of a sudden, I'm going to prison. And 2 years in prison was just, we want to talk about a nightmare that never ends, Russ. It was just
can't
crazy.
I can't imagine, because not only that, but you go to prison in Texas, right? Where a lot of these guys.
In Texas.
Yeah. But a lot of these guys who are in prison probably know that you're Border Patrol and they're like, fuck this guy. How do I get him? So you had to have spent every waking second trying to stay alive.
I didn't sleep for years.
Yeah, and then try also like not sleeping and trying to figure out why am I in fucking prison right now for doing my goddamn job?
You know,
I really wish, like, I like the body camera stuff now because, and I like a lot of cops in the country these days are posting videos and pictures of themselves interacting with the community right now, and they have, because of social media laws and shit like that, or laws with their departments and stuff, they have to block out what agency they work for, and I get that stuff, but if for every boot in the chest of a guy that's trying to get up off the ground and start a fight with you, if they showed every fucking meal one of these guys purchased for one of these people when they took their own food and water out and gave it to these people who are committing crimes, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is my stuff for today, but I know you need it more than me. Here it is.
Yeah.
If for every one of those, that it's like a character witness, right? So the idea your guy can't testify on your behalf before you speak in court. That's absolute fucking nonsense, dude. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
And I've been that guy. Have I violated policy? Yeah, I did, because I left illegal aliens unattended in my vehicle while I walked into the grocery store and got them water because they were thirsty.
Yeah.
You know?
Did I let a kid out? Like, police do this shit all the time. If you're a cop out there and you patrol an actual neighborhood, which I think community policing is so important because you get to know people and they respect you and you respect them. That's what this country is supposed to be about. this 14-year-old kid, he's got a fucking ounce of weed on him or some shit. I'm like, dude, at least try to hide this shit. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, you know how many police officers go out of their way to not put people in fucking prison?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, yeah. Dude, what the fuck?
How long were you in jail before they figured out who you were and what you did?
Oh, they knew who I was when I got there.
Right away.
Yeah. I mean...
They have a network.
Yeah, these... Not even just the criminals, but the fucking...
The guards.
The administration in federal prison especially is not great.
So I got picked up from home. They busted in my door, pushed my then 70-something-year-old mom on the ground.
Wait, you had already been convicted. Why didn't they just call you and tell you to come there?
I had already self-surrendered twice before. But all of a sudden, they decided they had to come kick in my door.
If you had fucked somebody out of $1 billion, they'd call you and be like, hey, can you come in on Wednesday?
Right. Yeah.
So they kicked in my door about 4:30 in the morning, pushed my mom on the ground. They took me away. They put me in one of those contract prisons downtown San Antonio in a geo prison for 3 or 4 months. Then they put me on Con Air, sent me to the transfer center in Oklahoma City, which is right on the airport, which was a whole crazy experience right there.
Now, was Nick Cage there? Or John Cusack.
I didn't see any of them, but I heard they were there.
Yeah, he's probably the next plane.
Yeah, next plane.
And Danny Trejo was a friend of ours right back there on the fucking wall.
Yeah.
Well, wait.
I met Danny.
Danny's a great guy.
Great guy.
Anyways, yeah, so you go. You,
so
you,
then they send me to a low in Comin, Florida, and I'm there for a few months, and I get jumped by the Mexican population because they find out who I am.
What do you mean? So when you say get jumped, they beat the shit out of you?
I got jumped, but they didn't beat the shit out of me. I actually ended up splitting somebody's melon, and I got transferred out, got sent to the penitentiary in Atlanta, Castle Grayskull.
Jesus Christ, that's
is that a scary place or what?
The worst of the worst.
I mean, they don't call it Castle Grayskull because it's awesome.
Fuck, dude, man. God damn, you just. I mean, it kept just getting worse for you.
Yeah.
How did you survive that?
Well. Right, and when I was in that place, I was in solitary confinement. It's a high security, and I was in solitary confinement, and I was in a jail cell 23 hours a day, 24 hours a day, except for Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, which they let us out for an hour to either use the phone or take a shower.
You were taking 3 showers a week?
Yes.
Or they have that.
Or using a phone.
It's a 12x18 fenced in area for your outdoor time.
No,
sometimes when you're in fucking federal prison,
right? They do that, but we didn't get that.
12x18, like that. That's your yard time is an 18x12.
And then you gotta get strip search on the way in and on the way out. But at that penitentiary in Atlanta, we didn't have that.
Really, Jesus.
No, we were in our cell except for 1 hour on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, which we had a choice of either taking a shower or making a phone call, and. It was a cell made for two, and we were 7 in there. So there was a guy on the top bunk, guy on the bottom bunk, guy underneath the bottom bunk, a guy wrapped around the toilet, 2 on the mattress to the side, and I was wrapped around under the sink with my feet on the toilet with a roll of toilet paper as a pillow.
For how long?
4 months.
For 4 months you were in there.
Yes.
And what's it like being in a cell with 7 dudes like that? I can imagine you guys are fighting a lot or you're trying to stay alive.
A little of both. Yeah, there was in this part, they come and go because everybody transfers.
Mm, sure.
And at one point, there was 5 of us in there. And I had gotten the bottom bunk. And there was one guy from Aruba. And I wanted to pound this guy. I never wanted to beat somebody so bad other than this guy. Because he was saying how he and his friends in Aruba used to take American girls and take them out on the boat and rape them for days. And he was bragging about it.
Jesus.
And
Christ.
I tried getting him fired up so many times. I cursed his mother.
Yeah.
You know, but he wouldn't go.
People like that are cowards, though. I mean, you know this from the work you've done in the past, but people that men that rape women are cowards.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
They're never.
And this guy bragged about it.
They'll never fight a man.
And I told the warden, I said, you need to get me out of the cell because I'm going to hurt this guy. And they wouldn't. But then they transferred me out, and I went to the. I finished out at the. Yazoo City, Mississippi Federal Correction Center.
Okay.
So they sent me there, and that's where I finished
out. Well, at least you got a nice tour of the Southeast.
Yeah, no right? kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't see much outside.
Anyway, yeah.
So when you get out, I imagine, you know, you got to start over. Was your mom still alive? Were you able to go back and see your mom? And
I'm actually taking care of my mom right now. She's 87 years old and she's got bladder cancer and she lives with me now.
That sucks, but she's 87. Caretaker. That's a long time. Yeah, man. Good for her.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if any of us are going to make it that long.
I hope I don't. Yeah, man. And it sucks because she's such a strong woman because she traveled everywhere. Mm. She went to New York City from Puerto Rico in 1950 and she's always been everywhere on the bus.
Is that where you guys are originally from?
I'm from Brooklyn, yeah.
Oh, no. Born and raised in Brooklyn. Your mom's from Puerto Rico?
My mom's from Puerto Rico.
Where in Puerto Rico is she from?
From Ponce.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
There you go.
Ponce.
That's how it's you pronounce it taco, dummy. Yeah. Hell yeah.
It's not taco.
Yeah.
That's why you buy all your stonks and Ponce.
I actually try my best not to pronounce words in the language that they come from because I feel like an asshole doing that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
Burvelde.
Yeah, I can't. There's no way. I would sound so pandering if I was trying to do that. By the way, what's up with Texas and not naming or pronouncing words right? Like Burnett. No, it's Burnett, motherfucker.
Right.
And everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And it's Bexar. Fuck.
It's Bear.
Bear. I hate it.
When did your fight for a pardon start then?
Mm. Well, I've been always talking about a pardon, but Bush put me in prison. Obama wasn't going to give me one.
Uh-huh. No,
Once President Trump became president, I was like, I've got to do this. So I got a friend in San Antonio who's a national talk show host, Joe Pags.
Yep.
And me and him have been a good friend. He's been a big advocate of mine from the get-go, known him for 15 years. He's got this guy on his show regularly called Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott, who's a professor of law at St. Mary's University and runs the Warrior Defense Project.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They took my case on pro bono and pushed my pardon.
The only people that have the ability to get stuff like that done are people that do it pro bono at this point, right, to be honest, because nobody's going to spend money on your ass.
And I know a lot of good people. Sarah Carter from Fox News, she's written stories on me. So I just had this big push, and once the pardon was actually filed, everybody just pushed it out. And I actually, last February, I started my own podcast, Gary Brugman Podcast. Mm-hmm. It's actually down right now at the request of some people, but it's coming back up. But I started my own podcast just to reach out to the president because I know Chris Tanto Peronto, and I've been on the Battle Line podcast, and I've been on several other radio shows. And I was like, you know, this is actually one of the longest podcasts I've been on. But normally I get, you know, an hour, hour and a half, 20 minutes. I started my own podcast to reach out to the president. But after episode 3, when I got done with my story, I was like, well, I'm just going to continue. I started having on guests, and I got up to 77 episodes, and it became kind of therapy for me, and I loved it. So I'm going to be starting that back up here soon.
Good. Yeah, it's important. It's important that you find other people that share common ground on your story, because ultimately, we've all got to decide to be on the side of justice and against injustice.
Exactly.
Right? Regardless of who it happens to. And hearing stories from different, like hearing your story and realizing what can happen to somebody that has faithfully served their country, they could still get fucked over. It gives you a really good perspective on people that we know are disenfranchised already before they even get into the criminal justice system. You know what I mean?
And like I said, then a lot of people don't know what it feels like to have the full power of the federal government come down on top of you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a scary feeling, and they will try you until you're broke.
I mean, it's taxes, right? So rich people can afford great CPAs, so they pay less percentage of tax, right? We've created a system where you have to be wealthy and powerful to defend yourself against government intrusion into your life, and that is not in any way what this country was supposed to be. Right. All these people that serve 47 years, for example, or I guess 48 now in the federal government, it was never intended to be that way. George Washington was the first president of this country, and he got at the end of his second term, let's be real. George Washington could have served for the rest of his goddamn life and nobody would have said shit about it. But he decided that was long enough. Like, I'm going to go back. Well, it was 8, but yeah, like 4 years at a time. I'm going to go back home. And that's the end of it. And nobody after him even attempted. Until FDR.
He gave the first pardon in 1795.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. I've done this show for 6 years at this point. Now is obviously where we get to the drinking bro of the week. For the first time ever, I have a feeling that I know who the drinking bro of the week is. It's got to be President Trump, right?
President Trump. There's no way he's going to change my mind how great a president he is.
I was going to say, I've never guessed the person before, and this one, it was easy.
There's nobody else, man. The man has changed my life. It's such a great feeling. And like my buddy Scott knows, man, I've had this big smile on my face. I'm wearing a free shirt because I'm free.
Yeah. Veteran.
Yeah. I mean, veteran. That's Rocco's.
Yeah. Rocco. And then we've got the Sons of Liberty Gunworks. Yep. They just gave me a rifle the other day. It's fucking dope.
They were on the podcast last week.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, Mike's a great dude. Yeah. They're all great dudes.
Yeah, Mike's a great guy. I was there yesterday, as a matter of fact. I was talking to Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle and Mike. Yep. Good dudes.
Man.
Good guns,
bro,
too.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this is the first time I've ever been speechless. I've never heard a story like yours before in my life. And, like, everything you've gone through is so horrific for a job that you voluntarily took to protect our country, and yet our country was the one that put you through all this fucking bullshit.
It's why that quote and the idea behind it is so important. First, they came for the socialists, and I was in the socialist side. I didn't say anything, right? You cannot allow injustice because it eventually is coming for you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Somebody that doesn't like you will get into power eventually, and they're going to use that power against you. We cannot allow that to happen in this country.
But to wait 20 years for justice and to go through, you know, 2.5 years in some of the worst hellholes in our country and come out of it like a great fucking person.
Trying to do my best, brother.
Is amazing.
For everybody.
Because usually, shit, man, everybody's extremely bitter and rightfully so.
It would be easy to be angry piece of shit right now, to be honest.
Well,
it would be easy.
I can't say that I wasn't when I got out of prison.
Course, yeah.
Sure,
I
mean,
we all go through that at some point.
I mean, when I got out of prison, I was going to the Rampage games in San Antonio. I wouldn't stand for the national anthem. I was angry.
Yeah.
You know? And then I have a mentor in Houston, and between him and Glenn Beck and some other people raised some money, and I started the tool business. I had a Macco tool truck back in 2008. And they started collecting money from across the country. I started getting letters from people. Here's $5, here's $20, here's $100. And writing me letters, sorry for what you went through. And I realized that it wasn't the people, it wasn't America that was wrong.
Right.
It was the government. And I love government. We need government, but it's the people in charge of government, kind of like what we're going through right now.
Sure.
You know, but there was one letter from a 7-year-old girl. She sent me a check for $7.62, and I still keep up with her on Facebook. She's a medical student in the University of Miami
right now.
She's
a big fan of AK-47s, apparently.
Right? No, $7.62.
That's pretty funny.
What was the significance of that?
She said that she normally has a lemonade stand for her dad's poker games in the basement, and she gives the money to the veterans, but her dad brought my name up, and she wrote me a letter. And she says, I don't know why you don't have a happy life like I do, but I hope you can one day. And her name was Nicole Van Meer. And that letter got me. And since then, I can't say I'm not bitter, but I just let it all go and tried to make the best of myself that I could, Ross.
Fuck.
You know, because you carry that chip on your shoulders. And like I said, I've lived, it hasn't been easy, but life is good. And everything's on God's time. You know, it took him 20 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a free man now.
Man. This is one of the craziest stories we've ever had.
And I told you at the beginning, you ain't going to believe how simple it is.
And you were right. And I, before you came on the show today, we always say the same thing to the guests. Hey, let's not talk about any of the stories.
Right.
Let's
you
talk
told
about
me
it live on air so that way it's fresh and we can hear it. That way you're not regurgitating the same story.
Right.
And that was literally your exact words. You go, you're not going to believe this. And sure enough, I even after this hour and however long is over, I cannot believe it. Thank you for sharing your story today.
Thanks for having
me,
brother.
Man. This was
thanks for everything.
Truly eye-opening. Where can everybody find you on social media?
I am on Instagram. It's Gary.Brugman and Gary Brugman on Facebook.
That's Brugman, by the way,
correct,
for you illiterates out there.
Okay.
Brugman. And I'll be bringing the podcast back and Facebook and Instagram. That's where I'm at.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you to President Trump for pardoning this
man. Thank you, President Trump. It's changed my life.
Yeah, absolutely. For D'Anthony Holloway, I am Ross Patterson. This is The Drinking Rose.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.